Well, it's finally here. The moment that everybody has been waiting for is here. Football season just around the corner, and you can start the season by winning $2 million in week one at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site. One-week fantasy means no season-long commitments, brand new season every time you play. You just pick two players, pile up the points, and pick up your cash. That's it. Simple, boys and girls. Why wait until the end of the season to get paid when you can win huge prizes every single week? You can get started playing right now. Prepare for the regular season with preseason contests running through August. You've already been scouting players. So look, you can just get ready for your season-long fantasy team. Put that knowledge to the test every week at DraftKings.com, where you can turn your love for football into a lifetime of cash. So here's the deal. Hurry to DraftKings.com right now. Use the promo code TAZ, TAZ, T-A-Z, to play for free for a shot at $2 million, guys. It's crazy. In the week one millionaire maker and a TAZ for free, enter now at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
From the Red Hook section of Brooklyn, New York,
the former three-time world heavyweight champion.
If you can survive, if I let you.
He is the human suplex machine.
Now Taz is dominating the audio world with his award-winning human podcast machine.
Welcome.
Hey, this is the Fantasy Draft Edition. Love this reaction show.
For the celebrity edition of HPM.
The human podcast machine.
Try to keep up.
You're not afraid of a little competition, are you?
This is Taz, the human podcast machine.
Hey, 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 what's up, what's up, what's up, folks? How you doing? This is Taz. Thank you for downloading and or subscribing to this edition of the Human Podcast Machine. I appreciate you. Appreciate you telling your friends and family about what we've been rolling, kicking out here for the past, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 months, whatever it's been. And it's about to cook up. As you guys know, I've been teasing it. It's the longest tease in the history of teases. But might be able to break something really, extremely soon here to give you full detail. I think it's coming your way sooner rather than you know. But I digress. I want to talk about a few things in this episode. I'm going to talk about NXT last night. Checked it out. Watched it. I want to give you some thoughts, opinions, views, react, point of view type deal. Also, going to have a very, very cool, for all you Paul Heyman fans out there, or ECW fans, or whatever, a Taz tale about Paul Heyman and my first encounter with Paul. So I think you'll get a good chuckle out of the story I tell you guys in this Taz tale. Something I did not cover on this past Monday show when we did Monday show, Seth and I, was the unfortunate loss of the legendary football star, NFL star, Frank Gifford, an amazing broadcaster, football broadcaster, Monday Night Football years back, and great player for the New York Giants and all that. I think he went to USC, Frank Gifford also. Amazing running back, tough dude, great voice, great broadcaster. The whole deal. I had the opportunity to briefly meet Frank Gifford years ago when I was in WWE, and I was driving from Long Island to the studio in Stamford on a Wednesday late afternoon and had to go do some voiceovers. And I used to stop in Greenwich, for those that aren't from the Northeast, when you're driving from New York or New Jersey or Philly or whatever to Stamford, Connecticut, you have to pass Greenwich, Connecticut. It's Westchester County, New York, and then goes into Connecticut. I think Darien might be first, and then Greenwich, or Greenwich is first, and then Darien. I don't know. But I know both of those are before Stanford. So there's your Rand McNally moment. And for those younger listeners, Rand McNally was a map maker, designer, or inventor, whatever the hell he was. He used to write maps. You young folks don't know what a map is. Your map now is called GPS or NAV. So, which I like GPS and NAV better than Rand McNally. So anyway, there's your map moment. So I used to have to drive through Greenwich, Connecticut from New York to get to Stanford. And I would always stop at my favorite Starbucks right off I-95. And I'd grab myself a nice iced coffee and maybe a quick little sandwich, you know, over at the old Starbucks. And several times I've seen this gentleman sitting outside the place, and he looked familiar. It's like, and I'm like, man, that guy looks like Frank Gifford. And you know, and sure enough, the one of those weeks, I had the nerve to go up to him, and I said, hey, so I'd like to introduce myself, because I think I know who you are, and you're Frank Gifford. Yes, sir. I go, how you doing? And introduced myself, and he had no clue who I was, which was totally understandable, and I expected. But it was just great. I just shook his hand real quick. He used to go to that Starbucks. I believe him and his wife, live in the Greenwich area. So, you know, of Connecticut. So they did. So he's no longer with us, Frank Gifford. So, you know, thoughts and prayers to his family and friends. You know, great loss. Seth and I, you know, it was one of those things after the show on Monday, like, we never talked about Frank Gifford. So so that's the, I just wanted to pay my respects to the GIF on you know, right here on the Human Podcast Machine, and just say sorry to hear about that, and very sad. It was a great player. And seemed like a great guy. So, also speaking of football, you know, God, how do you not have people, were, you know, tweeting me about it, you know, asking my opinions and thoughts on this whole thing with Geno Smith getting sucker punched in the locker room by IKM and Polly. I don't know if I'm saying his last name right, linebacker who used to be with the Jets. And you know, there was this whole big thing that this guy just initially just came up and just punched Geno Smith in the face in the locker room before practice. Now, you know, a couple days, a day or so, whatever goes by, and now, you know, the other side of the story is starting to come out. And I was just reading, I saw this yesterday on the radio, and I was just reading this right now on Twitter a little while ago this morning from The Big Lead, at The Big Lead. It's a good good Twitter account, gives you some, you know, sports news and stuff like that. Geno Smith refused to pay IKM and Polly $600, pointed his finger and said, I guess in IK's face, pointed his finger and said, you're not going to do anything about it, unquote. And I guess my man IK did something about it and punched him right in the face. So I don't suggest that's how you settle your quarrels. I also don't suggest putting your finger in another man's face, especially when you own money. So, you know, where I'm from, you don't do that. And I guess where IK's from, you don't do that. So, you know, I think he was in the league like 1 or 2 years, IK. Was a linebacker for the Jets. Big dude. Obviously pretty nasty, aggressive fella if he's a linebacker in the NFL. And so that's not a sucker punch, folks. I mean, I you know, my view, that's definitely not a sucker punch. It wasn't like he came up behind a guy and cold-cocked him in the head after practice, or when the guy was in the cafeteria or in the shower or whatever. He didn't, you know, he not only did Geno Smith see it coming, it sounds like Geno Smith was the agitator, you know? I mean, apparently it was something, look, I'm not a sports reporter, but I'm just like you guys, a regular football fan, a sports fan, but apparently Geno Smith was supposed to go to a football camp, and I don't know if IK was involved with organizing it, or if IK laid out the money for Geno Smith's flight. It was something with a flight. And then apparently one of Geno Smith's, he couldn't go to the camp because, I guess it was a camp for kids or something, for young football players, because apparently there was a death in his family or one of his friends or something happened. It was a death. So Geno Smith couldn't come. So it sounds like IK laid out the money for his flight. And then it just seems like Geno just said, all right, well, I'll just reimburse you. I'll just pay you back. And it sounds like IK was hunting down his money. He wasn't getting his money. And then Geno Smith kind of act like a little crazy there in his face. Next you know, he gets his jaw broken. So now Geno Smith is out 6 to 10 weeks, the Jets are saying. The head coach of the Jets completely straight up fires IK on the spot, which, you know, I understand you can't have fist fights in your locker room. You know, there's got to be a trust. Sure, there's scuffles, there's arguments and all that stuff. I just wonder if the head coach, Todd Bowles, got the whole story. If he knows that this guy was agitated by Geno Smith. Because all the head coach Bowles said was, well, it was some, like a sixth grade argument. I don't want to get into it. Like, he wouldn't give the details. So, but then the details kind of came out. In comes my Buffalo Bills. So, and my man Rex Ryan. This is just so funny. Rex Ryan, he brings in, he hires IKM and Polly to come play linebacker for the Buffalo Bills. He signs this guy, claims this guy, whatever he was, you know, whatever you call it in the NFL. But now he's going to be a Buffalo Bill. I just think this is awesome. This is why I love Rex Ryan. This is why I've segued and became a Bills fan. Because of this whole story encompasses Taz's problem with the Jets. And that Taz has been a Jet fan since he's a little kid. And how that's ended now. And it ended months ago, as you guys know, that follow me on Twitter. I've been singing the praises of the Bills, but I always will have that love for the Jets. I'll never root against the Jets unless they're playing the Bills. I will not root against them. I will not root for them, but I don't want to see them do bad. You know, to me, it would be great if they go super far, but I'd rather see the Bills go to the big show, to the Super Bowl. But this encompasses my problem with the Jets. It's just problems. Just always problems. Now you got a quarterback who's out. He's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks, your starting quarterback. And who knows if he's ever going to be able to play the game the same way. How's he going to call out cadences? How's he going to yell with his jaws wide shut? The guy's going to lose a bunch of weight because he's going to be eating steak through a straw. You know, and it came out like you know, the victim here was Geno Smith. And I don't think that was the case. It sounds like there's the other side of the story. You know, he didn't sucker punch the guy. You know, the guy was in his face and he just... Like a man, he said, all right, well, I'm going to do something about it. You know, he probably should have walked away and said, nah, man, you know, I'm bigger than you because I'm a bigger man than you because you're not paying me the money and you're acting like a jerk. Instead, he punched him. But who knows? I mean, that's it could be all hearsay. It's, you know, the locker room is a brotherhood, so who knows what the truth is. That a lot. I don't think it's all going to come out. It seems like a lot of it is coming out, but I'm just going by what I'm reading and what I'm seeing. Don't matter to me. I think the Bills... you know, Rex Ryan, it's almost become like, I remember when I was young, the Oakland Raiders, like the new Oakland Raiders. They're going to take anybody who's just this, disgruntled, dysfunctional maniac guys. You know, I like that. I like to see the Bills become that, but in control and win games, not be stupid and make dumb mistakes and get arrested in a bar because you beat five guys up, you know, or you're going 500 miles an hour in your Ferrari and you got a ticket and you got arrested because you were drunk. You know, not that kind of stuff. So anyway, that's my my football rant. So yeah, the Bills get IK and Rex Ryan comes in on his white horse again, my man. So it's funny because one more thing, when I did the charity softball game recently at Yankee Stadium for Boomer and Carton, right here on CBS Radio, it was in the dugout on the team that I was on. Was the celebrity team was Todd Bowles, the new Jet coach, and Rex Ryan. So it was cool just to, you know, have a couple of words with those guys, talk to those guys, and see both those guys interact. They both seem to have a respect for each other, so it was very interesting. Anyway, so that's the deal on that. So now, on to NXT. I enjoyed the show. I usually do enjoy NXT. I really do. I think, you know, they bang out an hour. It's quick, exciting, exuberant, good stuff always. You know, I mean, it started off right where with Regal coming out, talking about Finn Balor and talking about Kevin Owens, ladder match for NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn. And I think that Finn and Owens, man, they are just going to tear the house down in the BK, no doubt about it. I'm telling you right now, at the Barclays Center, they will turn it up, bro. It's going to be great. I'm telling you, that match, I just feel, is going to be arguably already match of the year. I mean, just, I don't care what anybody says. I just think the chemistry with these two guys, the build-up for these two guys, the buzz of NXT, the positive buzz of NXT, right there, butted up against SummerSlam the night before in Brooklyn in front of some hardcore, passionate wrestling fans, sold out for that event. It's just, I'm telling you, it's a perfect, perfect chemistry and perfect ingredients for a great dish, and that's what you're going to have here in this match. I really, truly believe that. And I thought Regal did a great job in his backstage promo pre-tape with this, setting this match up. I think Regal does an excellent job as the commish there, the head guy of NXT on camera. I think he does an awesome job. He's always very well spoken. He obviously speaks the King's English, unlike me. And William Regal is obviously extremely credible, so he speaks, you're going to listen. You know, the guy was just a tremendous worker and an excellent grappler and wrestler and fighter. Nothing but respect for Regal. Haven't seen the man in a long time. Have not talked in a long time. Look forward to shaking his hand one day again and saying, hey, what's up, Regs? How you doing, buddy? You know, so always liked him. Always was cool with me. So, like Regal a lot. First match that they brought out was Ty Dillinger against Solomon Crow. And it's my first time seeing Ty Dillinger. Dillinger, I might be saying his name wrong, sorry. He does this 10 gimmick, you know. Dillinger, he's very entertaining. This was a very good match. And he and Crow have a very good chemistry in the ring. And they had a good match, a good TV match. You know, it worked hard. It was a good amount of time put into the match. Dillinger wins the match. He does this 10 thing. When he does something cool, he puts up 10 fingers, you know, his hands, and everybody goes, 10! And I tell you, it's just the simple things like that, that you could connect with the audience at that level, at somewhere like Full Sail like that. And once you get out of there and go to the bigger roster, whenever this kid does, I mean, it's great. It's a great, simple gimmick that works. This guy, Ty Dillinger, he's got this, just kind of this shit-eating grin on his face all the time, this smirk. He's got a face on him that he's just laughing like you kind of want to hate the guy, but he's funny, you know? So the 10 thing works. It's so simple and silly and sophomoric, but it's great. I thought it was awesome. From an announcing standpoint, I don't think the announcing helped the match at all. I think Corey Graves, out of the three announcers, the only one who really helped Dillinger get over a bit. He did. Corey, I think, did. But the other two cats really just, there's nothing there. It's just, there's you know, throughout this whole show, on the announcing point of view, and sometimes I'm a little harder on that stuff, but there was a lot of dead air and opportunities to get guys over, and it just wasn't done. I think out of the three fellas there, I mean, Corey Graves is obviously the better one. I thought the match was good. And I thought whoever booked it, I thought it was the right two guys to book against each other. Corbin worked with Axel somebody. Could not hear the guy's name. Don't know the guy's name. It was an enhancement match. I mean, just a quick, you know, job match. From the announcing standpoint, there was no energy. It was like no excitement. I mean, this guy Corbin is, you know, a big, nasty, rugged dude. And just from an announcing standpoint, sell me more on this guy, you know, and tell me who he's beating up. I mean, Axel something. I mean, it was a quick squash match. I know that. It's kind of like, I think their announcers are in a production meeting and they probably shouldn't be, because some stuff sounds contrived, like they know what's going to happen and that's not good. Again, just being frank and blunt. But I don't think it takes away from the match. I mean, from Baron Corbin, from his angle that he did with Joe, which I'll get to in a second. I mean, I think the announcing hurts that, but it could help it, you know? I mean, I just think maybe I'm hypersensitive to it because I've done it for so many years, and I don't want to come and critique announcers because I've been critiqued, and sometimes there's a backstory you don't know. You're being told to say something, maybe before the show, maybe in your headset or whatever. You know, you're not really in business for yourself. But, you know, I just think that they could have, even though it's a quick match, it's a squash match, you can make the guy even more. You really can. I've done it with other partners. I mean, you can do it. It's more than doable. And then Steve Cutler just randomly runs in. He gets the end of days. Boom, he gets dropped. Just like a random run in there to, I guess, build this excitement. Now, I haven't watched NXT the past couple weeks, so I might be a little behind in the stories. But then again, if there are a story there, the announcers didn't bring me up to speed on the story. You know, that's your job. If there is a story. I don't know if there was. The announcers didn't say anything about this Cutler guy. He just came running out, and boom, we got the end of days. Then Samoa Joe's music hit. He comes out, which he got a great reaction. Promo confrontation in the ring. Which, you know, definitely you just smell it between these two guys. And it ends up where, you know, Joe was getting beat up and a little bit by Corbin. And then Joe just, boom, nice, goes behind, puts a choke on, chokes out Corbin right there in the middle of the ring. And I thought the announcers then put that over pretty good. They did a good job of that. They got the excitement level up. They brought it then. I know you got a crescendo up and down, but you still could do a little more in the beginning of the match. But Corbin got choked out right there. It wasn't a match, but just like a spot. And, you know, boom, right into what these two cats are going to face each other come NXT Brooklyn, the NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn. So, which I think will be great. Corbin, he's got heat, which is good. You know, he's a big, big, rugged dude. Very, very good worker. Very rugged guy. And very good athlete. And Samoa Joe. I mean, you know that. I mean, Samoa Joe's just straight up credible. And I think that both these cats will get great reactions at NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn, and it should be an excellent match up. It an excellent matchup, in my opinion. Saw a little deal backstage with my man Tyler Breeze, backstage promo about, you know, because he's going to face Juice and Thunder Liger at NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn. And Tyler Breeze deemed himself the face of the Rising Sun, which I thought was awesome. I like this kid. He's just loaded with charisma. It was great stuff here. Whoever writes for him, I don't know if it's himself or folks from WWE, it's great stuff. His look, his face, the way he walks around, the way he dresses, his work, he's a very good worker. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing him get after it in Brooklyn against a legend, a veteran like Juice and Thunder Liger. I've had the opportunity to wrestle Liger. And, you know, it was a long match, and I think I talked about it before, and I wrestled him in his hometown on his birthday. This was probably around 1992, maybe, around then, and I don't even remember the town. It was not Tokyo. It was like one house show loop when I was working for New Japan. And he didn't do nothing to me the whole match. It was basically all me, and just gave him the comeback, and then he beat me. So he just wanted me to beat the crap out of the whole match. I had heat on the whole match, and people were just sympathetic for him because he is Juice and Thunder Liger. This was in his prime, and it's his hometown, and it was his birthday, and everybody knew it was his birthday. Nevertheless, he won the match. I lost. But anyway, you're going to lose to the guy over there, you know what I mean, on his birthday, of course. But he was a huge star, Liger, and I think Tyler Breeze rubbing up against a legend like Juice and Thunder Liger is a great thing. And Tyler Breeze's promo ability is great. And again, face of the Rising Sun, Tyler Breeze. I love it. I love it. So looking forward to that come Brooklyn NXT TakeOver. Finn, my man Finn came out, the NXT champion, to face Marcus Louette. This guy Louette's got a very unique look. He's like his face reminds me of Kane when Kane was doing the crazy gimmick. You know, the crazy big red machine, like when he make the mean face with the bald head and all that after he took the mask off. But like a smaller version, this Marcus Louette of Kane. And I'm not saying Marcus Louette is small, but compared to Kane, he probably is, because Kane is just insanely huge. But I thought these guys had a good match. I mean, and it was a good match for the announcers to push the Kevin Owens, Finn Balor match at NXT Brooklyn. And I tell you, the announcers did a good job of selling me on the match. And then after the deal, Owens attacked Finn from behind. And then Owen leaves him laying, boom, with a pop-up powerbomb. He left with his heat at the right time, too, did Owens, Kevin Owens. Dropped the belt on Finn, just did the one move, dropped the belt on him, stepped on top of him, left the ring. You know, less is more, man. WWE knows that. And the folks, the agents, whoever it is, Triple H, whoever, doing the NXT thing, they know that. Kevin Owens knows that. Finn knows that. So they did it right. Left with his heat, not too much, very little. Dropped the belt on him, step on the guy, and leave. It's good stuff, you know. Really, I thought it was a great, great build up that these guys are going to face in this ladder match come NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn. Saw a nice package on Apollo Crews. Used to be Ooh-Ah Nation. I talked a little bit about Ooh-Ah recently on my show here on HPM, and he's now Apollo Crews. And I thought it was really good, man. This kid's well-spoken. He's just such a muscular, put-together guy. Awesome athlete. You know, just his gymnastic ability and wrestling ability. I just think that, you know, we don't know who he's going to face in Brooklyn at the NXT show, but it's obviously something big for him to, you know, just to make his debut at such a gigantic event. The largest crowd, I guess, the NXT crew has drawn yet. So in Brooklyn, which should be a big deal for Apollo Crews. So I project big things for young Mr. Crews. I think that he's gonna have a huge upside in the NXT area there, and going into the WWE main roster eventually. So he's got the look, he's got the athleticism, he was trained right by Curtis Hughes back in the day. Those know, remember the big cat Curtis Hughes. That's who trained this guy. He knows what he's doing. So I think he's got definitely a big upside. And then they built throughout the night. They did build that Bayley was going to face Becky Lynch. Number one contenders match to see who faces Sasha Banks in Brooklyn at TakeOver. Nice touch with having Sasha come out on commentary. Which I'll tell you, I thought she did a very good job on commentary. But even before she got on commentary, again, I thought that they had the announcers do the right thing and say she was coming over to commentary. That was always like my number one question when we knew we'd have a guest. If it was TNA or WWE, wherever I was working, I would always ask, you know, do we know that Joe Blow was coming to do commentary with us? And a lot of times the companies, whatever company, would say, no, no, no. And I would always lobby and fight. Well, why can't this, why shouldn't we know? We should know that he's coming over or she's coming over. And a lot of times, you know, they would say, yeah, you're right. That's cool. Because it just seems more organic, more natural. And I think that the announcers, I don't know which announcer it was last night on the show, said that Sasha was heading over to them, to the announce desk. I know that you guys, it's like, oh, it's such a little thing. Who cares about if the announcers say she's coming over to the desk or not? Because, you know, when you're forcing announcers to act and say, wait, I don't know, is she coming over here? Oh, you know, it's like, you know, it's so, you know, old school wrestling announcer stuff. I mean, you know, the fan base is much more intelligent. It's just like, let's not insult anyone's intelligence here. And she's coming over to the friggin' desk. And the announcers did the right thing by saying she was. I thought that was good. I like that. Little simple things, the little nuances to me are important. And I thought Sasha Banks was excellent on commentary. Because she didn't talk nonstop. She took her time. It was a long match. She knew it was going to be a long match. So somebody, the director, or she knew to take your time. You know, Byron Saxton looked dumbfounded that the girl sat next to him. I don't know. Like, I don't know if you've ever had a hot girl sit next to him before, but he seemed a little bit, like, perplexed, confused or something, but my man Saxton. But, I thought that all three announcers gave Sasha Banks the right opportunities to dip in and out with her comments. They also, all three announcers, asked her the right questions at the right times. And I thought there were times where you didn't even hear Sasha Banks, where the announcers just got into the flow of the match. And I thought that was important because it was such a big match, because it is a number one contenders match for Sasha's championship at the NXT show in Brooklyn. I think I'm doing a better job selling this than their announcers do. Who would have thunk it? So I humbly say. So onto this match. Bayley and Becky Lynch, fan of both these girls. Both just tremendous. I didn't know who was going to win the match. I didn't read the spoils. I didn't really know what was going to happen. I thought Lynch was going to win the match, but Bayley won the match. I thought it was excellent. It was a couple of segment match, and even during it, Sasha Banks said and complimented the females in NXT or WWE, whatever how she worded it. I don't know if she said WWE Divas. I don't remember how she worded it, pardon me on that. But she did allude to the fact that, hey, look at this. I mean, we have two females main event in an NXT show, a TV show, which is awesome. And she's right, you know. And even though she's a heel, she complimented that. She put them over. And it's like, that's, again, don't insult the people's intelligence. And they didn't. So, it was really good commentary by her. And like I said, Bayley and Becky Lynch tore it up. Total true main event. Great, great chemistry between these two girls. They both work really, really well together. I love the match. Becky looked like she was going for a Fujiwara armbar, I believe, and then Bayley kind of counters out of that into a roll-up. 1, 2, 3. There's your winner going on to NXT TakeOver to face for the NXT Divas Champ, Women's Championship at Brooklyn NXT TakeOver. Sasha Banks versus Bayley in Brooklyn. Should be awesome. That's my deal on that. It was an excellent show. I enjoyed it very much, and I'm going to take a quick break. We will take a quick break. Be right back. I'm going to drop down a Taz tale for you about your boy, Paul Heyman. We'll be right back.
The Human Podcast Machine.
Break time!
Let me talk real quick about my boys, because you're looking, again, a little ragged as usual. My boy's over at Harry's. Before we get back into talking more wrestling.
Just say he's not kidding either.
No, you're not.
I need a shave.
You really look like you just rolled out of a gutter over here. I mean, they've got a little bit of an odor going on, too, Seth. I mean, you got to take a shower.
No, now you're just going
too far. You kind of stink a little bit, bro. Let's be honest.
Get out of here. You can't smell anymore.
Nah, you can't smell me. Well, I'll tell you what. My boy's over at Harry's, man. I'll tell you what, man. You don't need to overpay for the drugstore quality razor blades. You know how how I am with Harry's. You know I love Harry's. They got their shave plan, monthly subscription. They send you the razors directly to your door for as little as $3 a month. Take the guesswork out of shaving. Harry's is going to basically take care of the shipments, get you the razors. You never want out of blades. They time it for you. Forget about having to deal with the burn on your face and your sensitive skin of dragging an old blade through your face as you're trying to shave those stubbles off. You don't need to deal with that no more. You know, decide you want to grow a beard? No problem. You tell Harry's, hey, look, I want some gruff. Slow down or modify my plan. You can do that anytime you want. Your first shave plan order also includes a free handle. And if you never used Harry's razors or use these handles, they are off the chart. They are phenomenal. Harry's is so confident, guys, that you will love their German-engineered blades that they are giving you basically 100% satisfaction guaranteed. There's no messing around with these guys. You don't like something, you tell them, they can't take care of it. They're not looking to rip you off. That's how Harry's works. I know you love Harry's, Seth, right?
I need to use it tonight.
You do. You will. Yeah. You will, because I know, of course,
one day I might be in front of the camera.
You never know. That could happen, unfortunately. You might be seen in front of a camera sooner rather than later. So start your Harry's monthly subscription and never, ever worry about buying blades again. As a special offer for all the new customers, my fans, my listeners, get your free razor and save $5 off your first subscription with my code TAZ at checkout. That's Taz at checkout. That's harrys.com, code TAZ, and start shaving better today.
Boys and girls, pull up your stools. It is now time for Taz Tales.
All right. Thanks for coming back. So check it out, man. You know, it's been a while since I've done a little Taz Tale, and it's time to do one. And good way to bring it back with talking about someone that affected my career in such a positive way, and that's no secret, and that's Paul Heyman. So I just wanted to talk a few minutes about my first encounter with Paul Heyman. It was a lot of years ago. It was, again, you know, I'm bad with years. You guys that are fans of mine know I talk about that a lot because it's a shoot. It had to be 1989, maybe 1990, somewhere in that world, maybe 88. Sorry. Late 80s. How about that? Very late 80s, early 90s. And I was trying to get booked and starting to get booked with IWCCW, which is Mario Savoldi's territory. Those from the Northeast know what that is. Mario's company was based out of Parsippany, New Jersey, and Joe Savoldi, Jumper Joe Savoldi, was a wrestler, which was some people thought it was his son. It wasn't. It was his brother. It was Mario Savoldi's brother was Joe. And Angelo Savoldi was Mario and Joe's father. Angelo worked for the WWF as a promoter up in probably New England area for Vince McMahon Sr. So the Vince McMahon, you guys know, his dad. That's who Angelo Savoldi was. So his sons started their own small territory, which was around the late 80s, early 90s, called IWCCW. And they just put on a lot of good shows. They built a lot of good talent. So many guys have been through the doors there. You know, guys that, you know, you could go on and on, but Tony Atlas was there, you know, myself, Bill DeMott, Tommy Dreamer. I mean, so many different guys went through the doors there. I'm missing a whole bunch of guys. I'm just, that's not what this Taz Tale is about. But regardless, so I always was trying to get booked with them because they had TV on Sports Channel, which was a big thing back then. So I was working as a Taz Maniac back then. I was Kid Crush back then, I believe. So it might have been more like 1980. Yeah, probably 87, maybe 88. God, I'm sorry. So anyway, I was doing a Kid Crush gimmick, I believe. Yes. I was doing a thing like I was from Hawaii, that type of thing. Like Kona Beach, Hawaii. That's right. And I was trying to get booked with them, and there was a guy named the Boston Bad Boy. And those who know me know I miss him so much and love Tony Rumble, the Boston Bad Boy, who helped me so much in my career, was one of the bookers, you know, was the main booker for a long time for Mario Savoldi, for the IWCCW. And before that was ICW. Anyway, that don't matter. And then Paul Heyman was in the NWA, and then he left. He got fired. Something happened. And then he ended up taking the book over either with Rumble or for Rumble. Rumble wasn't gone, but I can't recall what happened. But Paul was the main guy, the main booker. You know, obviously under Mario Savoldi, he was the owner. So I had a little heat with the Savoldis because of other shows I'd been on. I wasn't on their shows a lot, but they, you know, there was some miscommunication between, you know, if they wanted me to come and debut and do a job for someone. And I'm like, well, back then it was important. If you didn't get seen on TV doing jobs, we thought it was important. So I used to bring a mask with me and I'd work on a different gimmick and I'll do the job then, but I'm not doing it. No. We had a big argument in some show upstate New York. And I'm like, no, I'm not working. Sorry. You guys reneged and lied to me. And Marius Savoldi said, you'll never work in this business again. You'll never work in New York State again. Well, he was wrong. This was all before Heyman got there. And then, I don't know, maybe 6 to 8 months go by, and now Paul Heyman takes over. So Paul had knew my name through a mutual friend, a gentleman by the name of Ted Petty, who is no longer with us, who you guys know, Flyboy Rocco Rock, from the Public Enemy of ECW fame, and, you know, worked as the Cheetah Kid, and Teddy was just a great worker and a great guy and helped me a lot when I was younger. And, you know, Teddy used to come to Johnny Rodgers' school and kind of help train guys a little bit. So he knew me, you know, and I was in Puerto Rico when I first broke in and Teddy was on the trip. I told that Taz tale about it. Take a powder. That's a Taz tale. You guys know that one where Teddy punched me in the face basically about 20 times because I wouldn't leave the ring. Teddy knew Paul. And then Paul reached out to me before he left, like WCW. It was NWA, actually. And he was kind of had the bookers there ear and down south. So he reached out to me, and I reached out to him and said, hey, can I send you my stuff, send you a VHS of my work and some 8x10s? And he goes, yeah, man, no doubt. And he saw the stuff, and he liked me a lot. He goes, there's something about you. I like you, yada, yada. I'm going to push it to these guys down south here in the NWA, all this jazz. I'm like, cool, awesome. So he had like a short list of guys that he wanted to, you know, bring in the company, and I was one of them. And I never met Paul at that time, you know, so I knew him from TV a little bit, but I never met him. And then what happens is, he ends up losing his gig there and he leaves the company down south. And then he ends up taking the book over right away for Mario Savoldi. And there was no internet back then. There was no Twitter, no social media. So, you know, you found things out like a few days later, you know, unless someone just called you, you know, so it was a little bit different. You older folks listening to this, not old, but, you know, guys above 40 years old know what I'm saying. So what happens is, I didn't have a phone line in my own house. I was living in my parents' basement, but at my girlfriend's house, was now my wife, I had a hardline phone there with an answer machine. So I had a voicemail. I had it at her house. That's what I'm saying. I get this message from Paul Heyman. He's like, hey, you know, if you remember me and Paulie Dangerously, Paul Heyman, you know, and we talked recently, and because we didn't talk a ton, I didn't really know him. Call me back. I was like, cool. So I call him back. He goes, listen, what are you doing on whatever date it was? You know, it was like, it was the winter time. And let's say it was December 10th and 11th. I go, nothing. I'm not booked. Because I come to Kutcher's up in Middletown, Catskills. So, yeah, I know where it is. He goes, yeah, come there. We're doing a big TV tape. And I took the book over for the Savoldis. And I want to bring you in and I want to, you know, push you and stuff like that and get you over and start using you a lot. I'm like, well, that's awesome. And he's like, well, you don't sound excited. And I go, no, I'm actually very excited, but I don't know if this is going to happen. And he goes, well, what do you mean? I go, did you tell Mario Savoldi? So I didn't want to tell him that I had heat with the guy, right? I figured he didn't know the story because they were going to bring me in. And this is the same guy. The guy that Paul Heyman was working for was the same guy that told me months ago, you'll never work in New York State again, nevertheless for his company. So, I go, does Mario know? He goes, no, I'm the booker. Mario don't need to know. He pays me to book the talent. I'm booking the talent. Well, what does he need to know? I go, well, he goes, you got a little heat with him? I go, yeah, I think I got a lot of heat with him. He goes, tell me what happened. I tell him the story. He goes, don't worry about it. Just come up to Middletown. I'm like, oh, all right, cool, man. I appreciate it. He goes, don't worry. We're going to put you over. We're going to get you over and all this jazz. I'm like, all right, cool. Now, I have no car at the time. I had no money. I'm in bad shape. And I got a hold of a guy that I trained with Johnny Rods named Flex Lavender. His real name was Tommy Norton. Probably the nicest guy I've maybe ever met in my life in the business. Never really made it big anywhere. Had a great body, worked as Flex Lavender. As I said, his real name's Tommy Norton. He's from New Jersey. And he lived right near Ted Petty. And him and Ted were good friends. And I contacted Tommy. I said, you know about this TV tape when they're doing, the Savoldi's doing? He goes, yeah, I just got booked on it. You know, meaning Flex Lavin said this. I said, oh, no way. I said, dude, can I drive up there with you guys? I'll pay the gas. I have no car. You know my deal. He goes, yeah, bro. He goes, I'm driving with Ted Petty. I go, oh, no way. I go, awesome. He goes, can you make it to Jersey to my house? I go, yeah, I'll get there. He said, how are you going to get there? I said, I'm going to take a train. He goes, all right, well, we'll pick you up at the train station. So whatever town he was living in, I can't remember. I think he was from like Clifton, New Jersey, somewhere in that area. So I had to go to the city and get on the train and get to Grand Central Station and go on another train, go to Metro North. It was like a whole big rigmarole. Or Amtrak, whatever the hell I took. I had to leave my house show day at like 4 in the morning to take a bus and two trains to get to Jersey, then drive 4 hours in a car with these guys. So, and I didn't blink an eye. It's called paying dues. You know, it's called, you know, I'm getting an opportunity to go on TV and wrestle, so I'm going to do it. I would do it again in a heartbeat if it was back in that day, you know. So we're driving up there and you know, talking with Ted and Flex. And I'm like, yeah, so I'm asking him questions about Paul Heyman. And Ted's like, oh, Paul's just a character. He's hilarious. He's crazy. You know, he's Paul. He's a nut job. He's a maniac, but he's a genius. He's his greatest mind in the business. He's putting Paul over, you know, and he smarted me up to Paul, just like the type of guy. I didn't know Paul. So, boom, make a long story long, we finally get up to Kutch's, which is a big, like, resort where families go and stuff, and it's like, it's an all-inclusive type of gigantic place. And had, like, a little ballroom there, and they would shoot TV there for wrestling. So, so we walk down this, I'll never forget, this super long corridor in, like, this ballroom type of hotel feel, you know. We park the car, whatever. We walk, and this hallway is super wide. It's maybe like 30 yards wide, and it's probably, no lie, close to 100, 150 yards. So bigger than a football field, 150 yards long. And you could see there's a door opened up, and there's lights, and that's like where the arena is. But it's now it's only like, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So as we're walking, and we're about maybe 80 to 90 yards away from the door, we're walking, we got our gear, the three of us, and I hear screaming and yelling and cursing and just insane confrontation going on. I'm like, oh my God, what the frig is going on here? So I'm the young guy, you know, I look at Teddy, I'm like, yo, man, what is that? He just starts laughing. He goes, you know what that is? I go, no. And I hear screaming and cursing, you motherfucker, fuck you, I'll do what the fuck I want. I'm like, no. He goes, well, that's Paul Heyman. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah. I go, who's he talking to? He goes, I don't know. We finally get through the door, and they're in the arena near it's an empty arena, small little arena, like a ballroom type thing. And right by the ring, there's Paul Heyman in the face of Joe Pedicino and Mario Savoldi and Bonnie Blackstone, who was something with Joe Pedicino back then. With they were doing like a TV show on wrestling, they were announcers. But they were involved with stuff like booking and stuff. And there was some big argument where I think Pedicino was coming in to almost take over the book with Paul. I don't know the whole story. Paul would know better. And Paul didn't know, and he got hot because he got worked and kayfabed on this. So he was red hot, and he was just going off. And I'm like, oh, my God. Here I am. I got to come back, work for these guys, where Savoldi don't even know I'm coming. The guy hates me to begin with. And now the guy who's bringing me in is cutting a promo in his face. How am I doing? I wanted to say, hey, Ted, I'm going to go back to the car, and I'll sit in the car for the next 10 hours till you guys are done, because I'm not working. They're not going to book me. So I'm like, it couldn't be any worse for me. So we start walking in the building, and you had to walk by this argument to get in the locker room. And there's really no one else in the arena. Nobody. Except for TV people setting up cameras. And Paul just screaming on stops, and he says hello to Teddy and Flex. He goes, how you doing, brother? Nice to see you. Nice to finally meet. Shakes my hand. He hugs me. I go, good to meet you, Paul. And Mario looks at Paul and says, what the hell is he, pointing to me, doing here? And Paul goes, he's wrestling tonight three times. I'm like, oh my God. Teddy's like, just go to the back. Come on, let's go. Right? Now they're arguing about me. I'm like, oh my God. This couldn't be any worse. They end up having a, they didn't kick me out. I don't know if they settled it. They obviously settled their differences somehow. Then they had a promo room set up where everybody was cutting these promos. I wasn't talking, so I didn't do a promo. I went up to the promo room. It was a bunch of wrestlers. Paul was directing these promos. And it was like I was getting a preview of what he did in ECW. This was before ECW even existed. And he would just produce every single talent that was there. And most of these guys sucked at doing promos, and he would help them make them better. And he was so passionate about it. And he just took the time to come over to me and go, listen, man, I know you're worried because of this whole situation. He goes, don't worry. He goes, everything's cool. You're not getting swerved. You're going to work these shows. I don't know what's going to happen after these shows, but you're going to work these shows, and you're going to get paid before you work. I'm like, wow, okay, cool. Sure enough, he got me paid before I worked. He kept his word. I went out. I think I did like two or three squash matches where I just, you know, would eat guys up in the ring. I don't know if they aired all of them on TV. They probably didn't, because about 2 weeks later, Paul was gone or quit or fired, and that was it. So he never went back there. But then I patched things up with the Savoldis, and then Rumble came back in, and they booked me a bunch more after that, and everything was cool. But that was basically the story. So I don't know, just a kind of a crazy deal. And my first encounter with Paul Heyman was him screaming at someone. So, and then after we did the promo thing before the show started, and we were all in the promo room, they had like a big lunch, and all the talent would go into this gigantic cafeteria. Well, it was a dining room, not a cafeteria, where they had these tables reserved for us, and it says, like I said, all inclusive. So all these families are sitting there with their kids and grandparents or whatever, and then there's just 3, 4, 5 tables with wrestlers. And it was the weirdest thing. And I remember I was at a table where, coincidentally, it was a big round table, like, I don't know, maybe 15 people sitting at it. So I didn't know a lot of the talent. I didn't know a lot of production people. And I knew who Joe Pedicino was, and he was sitting there. And Paul Heyman was sitting at the table behind me. And Paul's just cursing out Joe Pedicino, acting like he can't, like Joe can't hear him. And he's doing it, and Joe Pedicino's taking the high road, not reacting to it. And like Paul's talking to some chick about Pedicino burying him. It was so funny. And I'm sitting there, it's awkward but funny at the same time. I'm like, I don't know who this Paul Heyman guy is, but I respect him, I love him, and he's friggin' funny. But this was back in the day, man, when Heyman was definitely a wild man. He was total firecracker. People think he's a wild man now. He is not like he was. We all would age and parenthood change and mature. And even during the ECW days, Paul, when he was running the ship, he was a wild man, but not like he was during that era. Lord knows what he was like in the NWA when he was there. I wasn't with him there, but, you know, he didn't care what anybody thought of him or said. He just a wild Mustang, man. Just, you know, and that's what makes Paul. You know, that's what makes him. He's just a free spirit. You know, he's passionate about his convictions and about his thoughts, opinions, his views, and he hangs on to it, and he don't care what anybody says. So you got to respect that passion, no doubt about it. So that's my story about Heyman, my first encounter with him. Hope you guys enjoyed the Taz tale. It was fun telling the story. Hopefully I got it all right. I think I did. I'm sure I'll hear from Paul, and he'll correct me on about 20 of the things that happened or didn't happen, because that's Paul. But because his memory is like a computer, and my memory is like Jell-O. So that's the rundown. Hope you guys enjoyed the Taz tale. Hope you guys enjoyed my breakdown of NXT and a little bit of football talk at the tippy top of the show. All right, that's great. We're dropping a couple more shows next week. Sit tight. Telling you this announcement I'm dropping is very soon. I'm very excited about it. It's going to be huge. Something I've been waiting to do for years. Years and years. I will get into that down the road. Soon down the road. Stay tuned for that coming. All right. Enjoy the weekend, guys. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. I'm Taz. You're not seeing.